My name's Rick Sutley. I'm an Elkie. And that is indeed probably the most important thing I'll say tonight. I know we had a little bit of fun here last week, but I want to reemphasize the first step is very critical. We can't just gloss over it. Doing these steps have really helped me to refresh my memory. And trying to help others, it's one of the best things I can think I've done in a while. So I'd like to thank you guys, the group, and for you guys being here. I wanted to start with a little reading out of As Bill Sees It. It says, out of defeat, strength. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. Obviously, I couldn't say it any better. I got notes, probably too many, tried to be ready, and I'll do my best. The second step, AA has all these neat sayings. I came to, then I came to believe. And the thought of coming to is like waking up. I was clueless when I was out there drinking that this was an issue. My wife knew. When I first got sober, I was having such a hard time being honest that when they said, you were probably insane when you were drinking, I was offended. They worked on me, And over time, it's still going on today, remembering certain things. But the fact that I'm a little bit more honest today was pretty important. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now, in the first step, you guys wore me down, okay. Even though I didn't want to be, I was an alcoholic. My life's a mess, okay. Now what? And we come to step two, and it's bad enough I'm helpless and hopeless and powerless, and now God. That was my thought. And luckily it was a fleeting thought. I didn't stick on that too long. I always believed in God, but I didn't believe He would help me. They say in the book that there's many different kinds of people that come here. Intellectuals, people that are scientific, and they like to analyze, not utilize. I learned that in rehab. I was stunned. I remembered it. There's others who have lost faith. Me. And there might be some others here. I went to church regular. I went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, and I still turned out like this. The beatings that I took probably had an effect. The nuns, they wrap your head into the blackboard, I was like, dang. And if you complain, then they get the paddle. It'd be even worse. When we're talking about the second step, I think all 12 steps are important. And if they gave it the time to break it into 12, I thought I should too. And you'll probably have to put the yank on me again to stop me. But AA doesn't believe that you believe the way we do. the steps are not functionary. They're your choice, how you want to stay sober and how happy you'll be. To get sober and stay sober, I learned, you don't have to get this all at once. I had a thought of what God was. I knew there was a God. I had a picture of God. I think I said that last week. I had to change my picture of God, just like I had to change my picture of what an alcoholic was. I wasn't an alcoholic, you know. Look at me. And then I heard women like Beverly and Carol King, and you know, they seemed so polite and nice. And then I heard their story. I was like, oh, they were bad, you know. And the more I lead, people come up afterwards and says, man, you are sick. I take it as a compliment. I belong here, you know. And what we really needed for step two was a truly open mind. And as my first sponsor, Merle, told me, as we were having a conversation at the club, he says, since when did this become a debate? God! And I shut up, you know? I respected him and I respected his sobriety. And he told me a lot of things I really didn't want to hear. Like a lot of old timers, you know, they come around and say, when are you going to get honest, kid? And then walk away. Hey, you some bitch, come back here. Or the dollar over the shoulder trick, you know. I said, what's this for? He says, well, if you're going to drink, I want to buy you the first one. I guess the dollar doesn't go very far now. And I sort of got pushed into leading at a detox. I wasn't ready. There I was, you know. And they told me it's how to stay sober. You got to carry the message. You know, everything you know, you need to share. And that was unlike me. I was very selfish. But when I got here, you guys were abundantly sharing. You weren't holding anything back. And that's what I needed. When I was leading at the care unit or St. Vincent's or Mill Creek, there'd be a time when I was thinking, and that's when most problems occur, I've been thinking, that I'm afraid that when I talk about God, you see their eyes roll back in their head, and I asked Merle, I says, you know, I'm afraid that the God talk is scaring them away. He says, don't worry, if the God talk scares them away, the bottle will chase them back. And he was amazingly helpful. You know, they tell us that alcohol is a great persuader. When I was taking stock of my life and where I was, it wasn't easy. You know, as they say, this is the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life. I found that after I stopped fighting, it became a lot easier. You know, one of the things that happened to me in early sobriety, I think God was showing off a little bit to get my attention. You know, he could have put it straight in the pocket, but he'd do a bank shot just to show off. And an example, I think I brought that up last week, I found a prayer card in the mud out of Serenity. And I picked it up and I brushed it off, and it was St. Anthony, Saint of Miracles. I said, that's what I need. And I used that prayer constantly. I'd pull it on my wall and just say it. And that wasn't like me. But when I found that card, I went up to the nun, and I can't remember her name, Sister something. It's an anonymous program. And I said, how many of these cards do you plant? And she had the best belly laugh I've heard in a long time. She says, we don't plant those, Rick. Okay. Another one, well, at Serenity, you know, they wanted you to read the whole big book before you got out of there. And let me tell you, they kept you busy. And so every time I get in my room, I start reading, and I have a bookmark in there. And I was nearing the end, and it was a weekend that the family was coming out, which they did. And they were asking us, what are you going to do different when you get home this time? And they started up with the A's and the B's. I was an S, so I got to think. And when it came my turn, out of the blue, I said, I'm going to wash dishes. I said, man, I can't believe you said that. And I went back up to my room after that session, and I opened up that book, and right where I was had the bookmark, in Physician Heal Thyself, he went on to say that he told his wife he was going to wash the dishes. Now, come on, that's, you know, a bit much. But I got the hint. So there's something going on here. You know, and that feeling we get, if you haven't had it yet, you will. That's something special is happening here. And my old beliefs had to be put in a trash can. I had to start believing like you were telling me worked for you. And how many times I heard people trying to explain God, and how many guys would say, I can't believe in God, you know, and sponsor would say, well, my God worked, you can use mine. Where do you guys come up with this stuff? And it was continuous. You know, you always had an answer for smart-ass comments. And that's what I needed, you know, kind of calm me down and realize that, again, I didn't know very much. I sure didn't know how to stay sober. But they assured me if I was open-minded and gave this a really good attempt, God would see his way clear to help me to stay sober. And I just, there were so many things going on in my life. You know, new sobriety, couldn't drive, something about DUI and going to jail, and you know. My wife chauffeured me around quite a bit, among other people in AA. After a year was up, I hired a limousine, come pick myself and my wife up, take her out to dinner, get an ice cream cone, and after it was all over, they dropped me off at the Elkanon Club. My wife went home. You know, I'd have never thought of anything like that if I was still drinking. I wouldn't want to waste that kind of money. But I'm blessed. I mean, I sometimes didn't believe that. I've been married for 46 years. That woman be a saint. And I hate bringing her to meetings because then you guys say, oh, there's St. Nancy. You guys are blowing it for me. And all these books we have, we do have quite a collection. And besides the 12 and 12 in the big book, I mean, they said, this is a book you don't read just once. And I thought, really? I have never read a book more than once. Except for, you know, Playboy or something. And when I was reading the big book, the second time and the third time, because it's full of words that I couldn't comprehend. Dictionary was pretty important. And there was a chapter in the book, it's called We Agnostics. And my sponsor says, well, how come you're not reading that chapter? I says, I'm not an agnostic. He goes, really? I said, I don't even know what an agnostic is, but I'm not one, you know? That's how smart I was. Well, he then suggested that I go to big book meetings and 12 by 12 meetings, and lo and behold, they didn't skip that chapter. And, you know, I was losing out by not reading that chapter. I learned more about spirituality and God and how He works in our lives that I ended up looking up the definition of agnostic. And it's someone who thinks that the existence of higher power or God cannot be proven or disproven. You know, I wasn't like that. There are people in here that, you know, have a little hurdle to go over. I had enough hurdles. And I always think how much I resisted this I'm insane thing. And when I got honest with myself, which like was last year, there were so many things that were glaring, but I couldn't see them right then. I just couldn't see them. I knew I wasn't honest. You guys talked about honesty all the time. And acceptance and gratitude and that sort of thing. And I learned a lot from those discussion meetings. But getting prepared for tonight, I look back at my life, and by anybody other's opinion, I was insane when I drank. Once I started, I never stopped until I was out of money, the bar kicked me out. Something. I couldn't control my drinking. I almost killed my wife one night. I come home from the picket line. You know what you do on a picket line? You get drunk and cause a lot of trouble. I was sort of good at both. But, you know, I come home this one night, and it was summertime, and the door was latched and bolted, and, you know, I could have broke it, then I just have to fix it. So I got on the glider. And that's my last conscious thought. When I woke up in the morning, I didn't even know this. My wife let me in. I promised we wouldn't argue. I guess I lied. The next thing my conscious thought is, I'm choking my wife. I was stunned when I woke up to see what I was doing. My daughter was kicking me and screaming. My wife's face was red. And then I think I heard this story about all the people that are in jail, that they don't remember what they did. And I could have just as easily been in their position. And you know, when I started trying to make amends and told my wife I was really sorry about choking her, she goes, oh, that. It was a big deal to me. And I'm sure it was for her at the moment. But that's how much crazy stuff I did. I was blaming my wife for things such as this. I had a DUI in 1983 in Ohio, so that doesn't really count here. So I'm going to the picket line every night. I'm only supposed to be there once a week, but you know, I enjoyed myself so much. And she was, what's that word? Communicating with me. Sometimes called nagging. But she didn't want me to drive the car. And I said, man. You know, she goes, you just had a DUI last year, you're going to get another one. And finally, after some arguing, I said, okay, fine, give me a ride down there. So I got to the picket line, and I thought, man, I can drink more than normal, which was virtually impossible, because I was filled to the gills every night. But I tried, and lo and behold, about 3 a.m, I said, oh no, I gotta walk home. It was summer, it wasn't a big deal. And I was walking. I was on East 5th Street behind where Loblaws used to be. And even though in my drunken state, I sensed there was a pair of headlights that hadn't passed. And I thought, I better walk better. And when you're drunk and you try and walk better, it gets even uglier. And my suspicions were right. Cop pulled up. He goes, where are you going? I said, 324 Wallace. He said, well, come on, we'll give you a ride. I said, no, I think I can make it. They said, we don't think you can. And coughs. And you know, when I got home, they brought the old spotlight out. Not on my house, the whole block, you know? That side and this side. Oh, Rick's home, you know? And then my wife comes out on the front porch, probably woke her out of sleep and all that, and the cop says, do you know him? They were kind of holding me up, you know? And she paused for a good 30 seconds. Come on, woman. She finally claimed me. I walked around the car, went up the steps, waved goodnight to the cops. And when I got her in the house, I said, this is all your fault. What an idiot, huh? I said, if I would have drove, this would have never happened. God, I was an ass. So I ended up getting 2 DUIs. One in Pennsylvania, and that'll match my one in Ohio. I was fired from work 3 times. Picket line activity was the worst one, they said. I ended up getting my job back, but they gave me a 6-month suspension. I had already gotten fired a few times. 3 days one time, 15 days another, and I got back to work. But as I'm looking at that now, I see, God, kind of out of control, don't you think? And I wasn't able to be that honest when I first got sober. I was incapable of reflecting on what it is that I had been doing. And so, it was work. It was work for everybody, I'm sure. When I got fired that last time, Amarillo Paper Company still owned us, and International Paper bought us. I got sober, and I was active in the union, and this one guy who came from down south, some manager, he says, Rick, he says, I've been hearing some stories. Tell me they're not true. I said, well, you got to tell me which one. And I said, all you got to do is go look at my file. So we walked right down the hall to Human Resources, found my file, opened it up, and on the very top, I didn't know that was there, it says, Rick Sutley was the most reprehensible employee in the history of Haramill Paper Company. I evidently pissed the right guy off, or wrong guy. My mouth was, you know, my weapon. And I knew reprehensible wasn't good. I just assumed that. It didn't sound good. It wasn't good. I looked it up. Deplorable. Disgraceful. Despicable. bad, shameful, repugnant, inexcusable, unforgivable. Holy moly! I didn't know I was that bad, but that's a big word. And after I got sober, my past was such a jumble in my head, I was sort of incapable of gathering all that up and, you know, looking at it. But just recently, since I've been doing this, my wife was looking over my shoulder and I said, yeah, you know, got a few things on there. You know all of them. And she goes, oh, you finally get that. What? You know, no shit. I love my wife. We've been married 46 years, about 15 of them happy. And I make that in jest. She's not here. Oh, she can hear the CD. That's all right. She knows I talk like that. One time at the detox at St. Vincent's, I was up there, you know, doing my spiel about what big drunk I was and what happened. You know, I got in trouble and I came to AA. And right in the middle of my lead, this woman started crying and crying, sobbing, you know, and I'm thinking, what the hell did I say? You know, after the meeting, I went up to her and I says, what happened? What did I say? She says, you made it sound too easy. This isn't easy. That's what I know today. My willpower couldn't get me sober, but my willpower can train my feet to come to a meeting. I can exert all my willpower that I want on my feet or on my car. And I had to show up. I had to learn that. In that first year, I was going to 2-3 meetings a day, weekends especially 3. And I don't know if I was learning anything, but I was there. And I wasn't drinking. And I was thinking about these things. You know, every meeting you go to, they read the steps. And you can't help but hear what they're saying. And that's coming up in your future, you know? Like, inventory, tell somebody else what I did. That was a bit much. But what folks in AA really did for me was give it to me straight. Didn't sugarcoat it. Said, Rick, we don't need you. You need AA. Damn. Talk about brutal. And those are the kind of things that I am very fond of today. That's weird, huh? That I'm fond of those pieces of advice. I never really believed that God would work in my life the way He has. I just didn't. I had done so many terrible things in my mind. And they were terrible. I lied. Every time I went drinking, I came home and my wife said, you've been drinking? No. You know, it was like, come on. And the truth was eluding me. And that's what I did. That's what we do. We're a little dishonest. We're a lot dishonest. And it takes a while to find that path where we can start seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And it's not a train. And I just am so thoroughly thrilled that I came to AA. But I wasn't thrilled when I first got here. I was showing up and I was saying what you're supposed to say, but I didn't feel it yet. You know, I didn't. And then things started happening. You know how many times I went to a meeting and I'd be thinking about, oh, first things first, you know. I go to a meeting and somebody picks a topic, first things first. I go, oh, come on. And that would continually happen. And I couldn't ignore what was right in front of me. I thought I was going to practice humility. They told me humility is the recognition of truth. And over the years, that's a topic many times at a meeting. I was at the club, and it was coming around, and it's going to be my turn, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to show them how humble I am. I'm going to pass. And I go, yeah, my name's Rick, I pass. And my sponsor is sitting right across the table from me. He goes, you never passed at a bar. I thought I talked too much. He says, I'll tell you if you're talking too much. You know, they just do those things for you. But it gave me hope that maybe things would get better. To have a little faith in what I call God, you can call whatever you want, higher power, creator, or whatever name you want to attach. But that's how alcohol had affected me so badly that my mind and my body were seriously affected. That's not a very easy truth to swallow. And I'm still not right. But the fact is, I'm way better than I used to be. And my neighbors are grateful for that. My co-workers were. But to practice things like the second step or the third step, it took real effort to find some quiet time somewhere so I could focus a little bit. I couldn't focus. And that was one thing I thought, this sounds pretty important to those guys. I better try this, you know? And little by little, I came to believe that indeed God would help me. It says in a book somewhere, either God is everything or He is nothing. We're all children of God or none of us are. Who wrote that book, you know? They knew who they were talking to. And those are the kind of sentences and phrases that immensely helped me. And I'll be forever grateful for all the people that answered all my questions, because I was nosy. I wanted to know what in the hell you were doing that you were so damn happy. I was sure you were drinking or something. 20 years my ass, you know, that's what I thought. Nobody can be sober 20 years. And then I slowly started to see that those guys were on different footing than me. They had a firm belief that God was in charge. And I'll be forever grateful that they answered all my questions, even though sometimes they were smart about it. That's what I needed. Okay, time's up. Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right, is there any question time? Don't go running away yet. Anybody have any questions for Rick? Oh, can't believe it.
Hey, Martin.
Martin, wait a second. Because we're recording, we want to make sure that we get your sweet look.
I don't have an answer.
No, it's a question. This is a question.
I don't have any questions. I just want to make a comment.
Well, we'll see if anybody has any questions, and then we can do that. How's that?
You're going to skip
for right now. Don't take it personally here.
I'm not personal.
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you, Rick, for I knew you. I worked with him, and he helped me a long time ago, so.
You're welcome.
I thank you for that.
You're welcome. That was an easy one.
Please don't make me go to jail.
I'll make this real easy. TJ Alcoholic.
Hi, TJ.
Can you speak a little bit about the insanity of that first drink?
See, I never knew that that was the insane part. Once I started drinking, I had no control. Ever since I came to AA, I have not found it necessary to pick up that first drink. But I've asked many, many people who have reintroduced or come back, and I always ask them questions, you know, well, why did you do that? Don't you know what's going on here? You know, it was somebody at a meeting one time said, I've never asked a person who reintroduced if they prayed that day that they got drunk. And I thought, well, I'll be darned. I wouldn't have thought of that. And that's a question I commonly ask, you know. If we're praying, we're likely to get help. That's what I've come to understand. I can tell you about all the first drinks I took, but since I come to AA, God got me. You guys got me. And my sponsor got me. Thank you.
Kathy, an alcoholic. So in working with others, at what point do you feel that, is there some way that you know that a person is firm on step two and ready to move on? Do you have any advice or any guidance for someone working with another person?
Good question. I'm never sure. I gotta see it. I gotta watch it. And they show by their actions that they're ready. You gain some kind of humility, I guess, was the one word I thought of, that helps you recognize the truth. And the truth was that I need to find God. And I don't force God on anybody, but I do believe, I'll ask him straight out, how are you on the second step? And the answer may be a little winding, and if that's the case, he's not quite ready, my opinion. And we can work on that. We can get the book out and say, see, it says right here, because I can't remember all that stuff. A lot of it's stuck in there, but I can't just recite it all. And when I'm trying to help a newcomer or anybody working the second step, I pray a bit. Just like I pray when I go up to that detox. Hope I say the right thing. When someone asks me to sponsor them, there's two questions. Merle Grotto had me do that. He goes, are you willing to do anything to stay sober? Yeah, I was desperate. And he goes, the second question is, do you believe or are you willing to believe in a power greater than yourselves? And I said, yeah. And it says in there, we emphatically assure you, you're well on your way. And I rely on that stuff because sometimes the words that come out of my mouth aren't spiritual. But I say prayer, you know, I do ask, just like I did tonight, you know. Whether he helped or not, I guess that's up to you guys. But step two is vital, as was step one. And action, you know, faith without actions is not what we're looking for. We want action. And you can see in people that bit of a change, and they exude it a little bit. They're more open to talk about God. And then you can start seeing the walls coming down a little bit, and now you got something to work with. I don't know if I really answered your question.
I am Paul, and I'm an alcoholic still.
Hey, Paul.
During the course of your discussion, you had mentioned some of these coincidences that happen. You'll hear something in a meeting, and then it'll come up in your life that day. I had one of those, actually two of those coincidences during your discussion. I was at a meeting yesterday, and they talked about something that you discussed, and then this morning I was reading a devotional book, and you mentioned something in the devotional about the devotional. It's not too important about what it was, because it'll be difficult for me to recreate it. But I thought, oh my gosh, you know, of all the topics, all the many topics, you just reinforced things that I had just thought of, which I don't find coincidental. The problem is sometimes I waver in that, you know, like, oh, you know, that's just coincidental and everything. How do events, you know, for me, the proof is kind of in the pudding. You know, it's like looking back after climbing a hill and seeing how high you are up, you know, and then it's more results oriented. You know, if I'm clean and I'm living a life, that's the miracle. But you do need help along the way. How do events like that, how has that impacted you? How has that impacted your faith, or has that impacted your faith?
That solidified it in ways that I cannot really describe. But those couple of little things that happen, I promise to wash the dishes, you know. And then I go back to the big book, and there it is. You can't arrange that stuff. And that gives you that something special is going on here. A little bit of work, or a lot of work, and prayer. You know, that's the best I can say. Thanks, Paul.
I'm going to ask Rick something here.
Yeah. See if I can get it right. Rick, when did you realize the insanity of your disease?
2-3 years into my sobriety. I was a slow learner. I could say it, but I didn't really believe it. I'm sure there's somebody in here that says things they really don't believe. We tend to do that. It took me a while. I'm much more honest today. And I can look at my life and go, holy crow, it's just a miracle I didn't die. My wife didn't boot me out or got arrested or all those many things that can happen to us. It's work. It's action. Thanks for the question, Marnie.
Thanks, friend.
Anyone else? Good job.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.